Howdy, folks. I'm fixing to tell y'all about Texas, nicknamed the Lone Star State.
I'm particularly fond of these. I pulled them out of a place on Midgard called Texas.
Don't mess with Texas?
That's the message.
I'm Walker, and I'm Texas Ranger.
Anything for Salinas.
Welcome to this week's episode of Texas Slang for Crazy. This week, we're discussing what happened to Lee Harvey Oswald's body. Lee Harvey Oswald is synonymous with that horrible day in November 1963 when President John F. Kennedy was shot dead in Dallas. As a former employee of the Book Depository, there's belief that Oswald shot the bullet right out of a window at his job as the president rode through Dealey Plaza in a motorcade. Just 2 days later, Lee Harvey Oswald's murder on national television by Jack Ruby left people scratching their heads. Ruby initially claimed he was trying to save Mrs. Kennedy from having to see the murderer on trial. To some conspiracy theorists, it may have been to hide the fact that the murderer was a double for Oswald, a Russian spy. Listen, there are thousands of theories about what really happened on that day in November, and while I'm as fascinated as everyone else, yes, I've walked through Dealey Plaza, yes, I have the newspaper copy, this episode isn't going to be about the Kennedy murder. This is going to be about what happened to Lee Harvey Oswald's body. Now, you might be wondering, why is she going to focus on the assassin and not the president? Y'all, this is a short podcast. We do not have the time or resources to do an episode on every single aspect of the Kennedy assassination. There are people who have spent their entire lives, and the FBI does have files on them, on this assassination. There are literally tours where you can take hours in Dallas with somebody who tells you all the conspiracy theories. And don't get me started on what happened to reporter Dorothy Kilgarren, but back to the episode. Oswald was born in 1939, 2 months after his father had a fatal heart attack and left his heavily pregnant mother, Marguerite, widowed. She sent her two older children to boarding school in 1943 and tried to leave Lee with an orphanage, but they said he was way too young. So she waited a year and returned and dropped him off. He spent the next few years moving between orphanages, being temporarily placed with relatives, and sometimes managing to stay with his mom until she would lose an apartment due to financial strain. Marguerite and Lee ended up in New York, but as she worked all day, he spent a great deal of time by himself. In 1953, the 13-year-old Lee was picked up by a truancy officer for not going to school. He sent Lee to a psychiatric facility, as the kid was known to threaten people with a pocket knife. They said he had no mental illness, but was definitely suffering from neglect. Lee became radicalized at the time of the execution of Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. I'd happily give you a whole lesson on why Ethel was probably a scapegoat, but this is a short and sweet Texas podcast. Lee found a pamphlet about the Rosenbergs and socialism, and he was hooked on the topic and began researching all he could. His mom brought him back kicking and screaming to New Orleans. In 1955, he lied about his age and applied for the Marines. He was rejected when they found that he was only 16, but a year later he tried again and got accepted. He was really into weapons he wasn't supposed to have, but he ended up getting caught when his illegal pistol fired and shot him in the leg. He ended up court-martialed. This was bad already, but then he got into more trouble when he attacked the sergeant who was court-martialing him. Oops. He went to the brig, aka military prison, and eventually left even more upset than when he went in. Oswald didn't have a lot going for him. He was heavily into Marxism during the Cold War and learned Russian while in the Marines. He was traveling all over the world with absolutely no concept of home. On September 11, 1959, he took a hardship discharge from the Marines. On October 16th of the same year, he decided to cross into the Soviet Union from Helsinki. He told his Russian tour guide that he was there to defect from the US. The Soviet Union was not thrilled about this idea and actually rejected him. On October 21st, the same day his visa ran out and he was going to have to leave, he slit one of his wrists in his Russian hotel bathroom. The KGB interviewed him again, and they decided again he wasn't for them. Once out of the hospital, Oswald stormed into the U.S. Embassy in Moscow. Now keep in mind again, this is the middle of the Cold War. He said he was surrendering his citizenship and for some reason decided to tell the U.S. Embassy he was going to give Russia everything he knew about U.S. radar codes. Irritated as hell, on January 4, 1960, during the Soviet holiday season, the USSR agreed to let Oswald defect. The problem was, Moscow really didn't want him, so they sent him to Minsk in Belarus. And believe it or not, Belarus is one of the only places on the planet I have zero desire to ever go to. In Belarus, he got an apartment from the Kremlin and a job making radios. The KGB wasn't exactly ignoring him. His entire apartment was bugged, and like most people of interest, he was always followed by Soviet informants. In about a year, he was already writing to the US and USSR to ask if he could just go back to America. In 1961, though, he met Marina Brusakova at a trade union dance. Some suspect the meeting was not by chance, and just 6 weeks later, they married. About 9 months later, they had already had their first daughter. He wrote to Senator Connally back in America, who basically just ignored his request to come back to the US, and sent him back a pamphlet instead, encouraging Oswald to vote for him as governor. He really didn't like this. In other news, Oswald had never actually surrendered his US citizenship, he'd only threatened it, so really there was nothing they could do to keep him from coming back. In June 1962, Oswald and his new family returned to Fort Worth, Texas, and moved in with Oswald's brother. Some said he was a lot thinner. While his US passport said he was 5'11", he was said to not stand as tall now. Documents would later refer to him as 5'9". The FBI checked him out, the CIA didn't even bother, that is, unless you believe they destroyed any records of meeting with him, as some theorists believe. He had a really tough time finding a job, and again blamed Senator Connally for not removing it. Basically, bad conduct thing off his record. Someone at a party told him he really shouldn't be blaming Senator Connally, he should be blaming former General Edwin Walker. And then shortly thereafter, Oswald bought a pistol and began stalking Walker. In 1963, so the same year as Kennedy was shot, Oswald came home one night really pale, saying he'd shot Walker, but really the bullet had missed him and it really came just through the home window. Walker was fine. Oswald, however, disappeared from Texas for a while. In November 1963, Oswald supposedly shot the president, and then 2 days later, after shooting a policeman, J.D. Tippit, hiding out in a movie theater, he was shot while police were being interviewed on national television. Reporters on the scene were shocked by the unexpected occurrence. Oswald's body was taken to Miller Funeral Home, but no one wanted to have the grim horror of keeping the president's murderer in his final repose. Finally, Rose Hill Cemetery in Fort Worth, Texas agreed to take the body, and a Lutheran minister agreed to do the ceremony, albeit extremely reluctantly. Only the Lutheran minister never actually showed up for the service. So on November 25th, Reverend Lewis Saunders of the Fort Worth Council of Churches stepped in and said he would do it, just, you know, for the family. But he was under extremely heavy guard during the service. And as there weren't many guests, reporters in attendance were asked to fill in as pallbearers. Like, how depressing does that have to be? But just as unexpected as his murder was the theory that the person buried in Oswald's grave was not in fact Oswald. Buckle up, because if you thought the previous was weird, this gets wild. So we're going to go back to that time where Oswald disappeared from Texas. It said he was spending time with his uncle, a known connection to the local mafia in New Orleans. In New Orleans, Oswald was passing out pro-Castro pamphlets and obsessing about getting some sweet, sweet time in the newly communist Cuba. He did not have really any luck recruiting people with the same interests, and in September he disappeared from New Orleans. Supposedly, he boarded a bus from Mexico City. He dumped his bag at his hotel and then hightailed it to the Cuban embassy. Guess you got rejected again. He ended up back on a bus to Dallas. There are a few CIA reports that say the above story is bunk. Supposedly, Oswald was spotted at a party with some Cuban diplomats. Some say he was hobnobbing with spies. What is known is about 2 weeks after leaving Mexico City, he returned to Dallas and took a job at the Texas School Book Depository, where he worked on mostly the first and sixth floors. Marina gave birth to their second daughter, so they must have at least seen each other once during this weird time. Oswald attended a rally for Edwin Walker, you know, that guy he tried to murder. The FBI came around on November 1st, only they came to talk to Marina, who by this time was living with a friend after a particularly bad, and it seems very legitimate, argument with Oswald. Oswald was concerned, but he kept quiet. He was just extremely jumpy. On November 19th, a Dallas paper published Kennedy's parade route for the upcoming visit. Oh, and that senator he hated, John Connally, would be riding up front. We learned nothing from World War I. Kennedy was in an open-top vehicle driving through the city, and at about 12:30, it's believed Oswald fired off a shot from the sixth floor of the book depository and hit President Kennedy. Oswald was caught after trying to hide in a movie theater. Now, if you really want to have a bad time, there are images of Oswald online as he shot at Jack Ruby. In these pictures, Oswald's eyes are wide and the police seem to not really know what just happened. Investigators found a list of kills, or wanted kills, in Oswald's residence, with Connolly's name surrounded by daggers, but there wasn't a single listing for Kennedy, so it may have been an accident. Now, in 1977, it gets weirder. A British solicitor named Michael Eddowes published a book called The Oswald File. Eddowes had some theories. He brought up the differences in height, he pointed out that family members had commented on Oswald's weight loss, and he said that his face was ruddier. His autopsy records didn't match up to the Marine Corps records, and the number of positions and scars on his body, including one behind his ear that he received as a child, weren't matching up. J. Edgar Hoover had even commented that he had suspicions about just which Oswald did the shooting. But here's the thing. The body matched up with fingerprints from before and after Oswald's visit to Moscow. Eddowes said that, well, the KGB could have just come in and changed the fingerprint files. The House Select Committee on Assassinations looked at the photos of Oswald before and after and said, this is the same guy, there isn't a problem. But Eddowes wasn't backing down, and he was adamant when he was talking to the BBC that Americans had a right to know that whether an imposter had been buried in that grave. In October 1981, this theory was put to test. It took some serious time to get approved for the exhumation. The medical examiner for Tarrant County, where Rose Hill Cemetery is, told him no. Eddowes went to Dallas. He got permission, but it ended up causing a six-month legal battle over who actually had jurisdiction over the body. Marina Oswald, his wife, agreed to go forward with the exhumation, provided Eddowes paid all the costs associated with it. She evidently had her own doubts. In 1964, government officials had given her a stack of papers and told her to sign them, and she wasn't exactly sure what the documents meant, just that they supposedly had to do with the grave and burial. Oswald's brother Robert was very anti-exhumation, but he ran out of money and drive to keep fighting. The exhumation started, and officials found that Oswald's burial vault had cracked. Water let into the casket lid and had caused a partial cave-in, leading to a partially exposed body, which is kind of gross. The plan was to take the entire thing to Baylor Medical Center, but as that was no longer possible due to the vault damage, they removed only the body and coffin, leaving the vault behind. The body was definitely in an advanced state of decay. The skull was the big prize here, as the team wanted to check teeth and dental records and to see if there was a crack in the skull from where Oswald had surgery to correct a problem following a really bad ear infection as a kid. The Baylor team confirmed the dental records and the scarring and stated that this was definitely Lee Harvey Oswald. Eddowes was surprised but let the matter drop. However, when the embalmer was asked if this was the same body he'd worked on all those years ago, he at first responded yes, but later stated it might not be. The embalmer said they didn't remember seeing proof of the cranium cap being removed, which was in the coroner's report. Could someone have broken into the vault and replaced the head? This head-in-a-box theory still floats around today, but most think the embalmers may have just missed it in the rush to get the body out of the funeral home and into the grave. The skull that was inspected had the cranial cap scar, after all. Now, just when you think this story is weird enough already, and that it's now rested, it gets weirder. In 2010, Miller Funeral Home used a private auction house to sell Oswald's original coffin at auction for $57,468. The buyer was listed as anonymous. Now, Oswald's brother Robert was not having any of this. In 2015, a judge in Tarrant County ruled that the funeral home intentionally hid the fact that the coffin was still around, as Robert had been made to believe it was destroyed after exhumation. Damages were awarded to Robert Oswald equal to the sale price of the coffin, and the coffin was returned to him itself. His attorneys said that the coffin would be destroyed as soon as possible. Today, we kind of don't know if that ever actually happened. We just have to go on faith. So yes, if you want a convoluted, weird situation of a burial, Lee Harvey Oswald is definitely a place to look. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. Again, I am not a JFK conspiracy person. There are so many websites and options for that, so I would definitely recommend looking at this week's resources and just having a place to start if that's your jam. If not, no harm, no foul. We'll come up with something weird for you to be into soon. Thanks for so much for listening. Have a great weekend. We are all over social media. And if you want to know more weird stuff about Texas, just remember the book Texas Slang for Crazy is out and available on Amazon. Thank you.